You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for the week of May 22nd, 2026. It's Not Safe for Work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we're still in countdown mode.
10, 9, 8, 7.
Hey, wait, come back. I didn't finish counting yet.
Because this is the 994th episode of the Professional Left Podcast with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
However you mark Memorial Day, with flags, wearing a poppy, the 3 p.m. national moment of silence, cemetery visits, or having a barbecue, we want to wish all of you a safe and happy Memorial Day. At our house, Memorial Day is also Stepdad's Day, because they always had to go and be with their dad on Father's Day, so we had a day for the stepfather as well. And it was Memorial Day when everybody had the day off.
Yeah.
So to give our favorite stepdad, Driftglass, a well-deserved holiday from show prep, we will be taking Tuesday off next week and returning very strongly and very powerfully next week on Thursday, May 27th. And we realize this will also bump our 1,000th episode, Good Times International Day of Celebration, back by a couple days. But that's a sacrifice for Driftglass and Stepdad's Day that we're willing to make.
We're willing to take a day off just for you people. Just for you.
Just for mentally Driftglass to have a little break.
Yeah. And since Memorial Day is a day of remembrance, we kind of wondered if there was a day set aside anywhere in any country that honors the act of remembering itself. So, for example, Cuba celebrates Cuban Historians Day every July 1st. That commemorates the date in 1935, Cuba appointed an official historian of Havana.
And Brazil recognizes National Historians Day on August 19th. Those come close to what we were thinking about, but not quite.
Not quite, because almost every day of remembrance in every country honors a specific person or a specific event, which is all well and good. But at the rate our history is being whitewashed and memory-holed and otherwise paved over, we here at the Professional Left believe that space should be made on the calendar for a remembering day. Maybe modeled on the book People in Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451, which if you haven't read it, it's a pretty amazing book, where possession of a book was a crime and books were being destroyed so fast that a group of traveling professors and authors and scholars took it upon themselves to each commit an entire book or chapter to memory so that humanity's knowledge could survive for future generations.
And amid all the other urgent disasters and horrendous crimes Republicans are committing every day, we are also in the middle of a long, grinding war against memory. We have a war that's been going on for decades. This is a war that was carried out against this country by the Republican Party, by conservative media, by the legacy media, and by way too many of our allies.
A war with no battles, no monuments, only casualties.
It's a war we here at the Professional Left have been fighting every day for going on 16 years now. Remember what Orwell said in 1984, who controls the past controls the future, and who controls the present controls the past. And right now, the past is under assault like never before, because remembering what really happened to this country over the past 50 years with clarity and precision is fatal to the ambitions of too many powerful people and influential institutions.
And I even have to take exception to that. It's over 250 years. When you look at Stephen Miller's War on 1619 Project, that's what it is. It's a war on remembering. Mm-hmm. What happened to slaves? And once Trump leaves office, dragged out or carried out toes up, there will come an all-out assault on the past that will take your breath away. Mm-hmm.
just like the legacy media and conservative media's radical revisionism that both preceded and followed the Clinton administration and the mountain of Bush administration disasters and lies and crimes that got erased the minute Barack Obama was elected, and the even larger mountain of despicable Republicans' racist atrocities that were retconned after Trump was elected. In the coming race to forget Trump or soften Trump or blur the wholesale capitulation of the GOP and the collaboration of major corporations and media companies and universities and the bone-deep racism and stupidity of the Republican base that made it all possible, the memory holding that is coming will dwarf all previous revisionist regimes.
So limber up your memory, folks, or I don't know. You know what you could do, Driftglass? Uh-huh. They could start what used to be called a weblog to write all this stuff down.
Yeah, there's an idea. Let's try that and see how that works. And to remind us to remember, maybe we need one day a year set aside for the transgressive act of dangerous remembering. Anyway, that's just a thought. And now on to Patrice Mersault, who friend of the pod, Rock Dots, turned us on to. Not the Patrice Mersault, who's the protagonist of Albert Camus' novel, A Happy Death. This Patrice Mersault is the pseudonymous proprietor of what we used to call in the business a blog, but it's now called a Substack, called Open Letters from Mersault. We're putting a link in the show notes for this Substack, so you can go look it up for yourself.
Patrice has done a few deep dives into the thoughts and fears of the local MAGA flora and fauna, which are interesting and would resonate with listeners to our podcast and readers of our blogs. We definitely want to give him a hat tip. The specific example we're going to talk about today is his breakfast with 10 of his late father's Republican friends.
Yes, but before we do that, Blue Gal, before we do that, it is time once again for a patented professional left pop quiz. We are going to ask you questions about various quotes and ideas, and you will tell us silently in the quiet of your own home or your car or the shower or wherever you are if these quotes are true or not. So, got it? Those are the rules. First question, the Bible says money is the root of all evil. Answer, no. The verse actually says the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil.
Question. Paul fell off a horse on the road to Damascus. Answer, no. The Acts of the Apostles never even mentions a horse.
No. Question, the animals entered Noah's Ark, if you believe it, exactly two by two. Answer, no. Genesis also describes seven pairs of some animals.
Question, the Bible says cleanliness is next to godliness. Yeah, that is not in the Bible.
No, it is not. In fact, I believe we know a pastor who's written a whole book on shit you think's in the Bible, but it isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Next question. The Bible says Mary Magdalene was a prostitute, right? That's everyone knows that. No, the Bible never says this. This was an idea developed later by misogynist church leaders and church tradition.
There's a lot of Bible in this quiz, I noticed.
Because almost everyone has run across this book. And almost everyone, whether they believe it or not, is beside the point. But what they think is in there is very different than what is actually in there.
What they remember is in there from some point, right?
Exactly.
So the Bible says the forbidden fruit was an apple. The book of Genesis never identifies the fruit, just says fruit.
But this one definitely is in the Bible, right? The Bible says God helps those who help themselves. No. It's often assumed to be biblical, but it isn't. The phrase is usually traced to a guy named Benjamin Franklin, who is definitely not in the Bible.
He hated the fact that Germans were taking over Philadelphia because they didn't speak English. They were taking all the good jobs, and he didn't like their complexion. He didn't think their complexion was American enough.
That's Ben
Germans.
Franklin. Ben Franklin, okay. Boys and girls, the most enlightened of all the founding fathers.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Question. The Bible says there were three wise men. Actually, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
The story mentions that the wise men brought three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, but never says there were three visitors. The Gospel of Matthew just calls them magi.
And just for fun, we're going to do a quote from the guy who wrote the angriest diatribes against the Bible you could ever imagine, Mark Twain. Did he say, it ain't what you don't know that gets you in trouble, it's what you do know for sure that just ain't so. Everyone knows that's Mark Twain, except it might not be, which is sort of the point.
Yeah, it sounds like Will Rogers to me, but anyway.
Yeah, it's attributed to Mark Twain frequently, but it is very likely that it not come from Mark Twain originally. And so with that in mind, let's go back to Patrice's post entitled, quote, "A funny thing happened over breakfast with Trump voters. Between the coffee refills and the check, the contradictions got harder to ignore. 10 retired Trump voters I met for breakfast one Saturday morning, all former co-workers of my late father's, most now deep in the familiar rhythms of grievance, cable news paranoia, and forwarded emails written entirely in capital letters," unquote.
It amounted to a kind of ad hoc focus group where the author asked thoughtful, open-ended questions like, what does dignity mean to you? And what do you think people owe each other in a society? Mm-hmm. And let the gentleman answer as they wished. And although the range of ride-or-die cultish commitment to Donald Trump varied a great deal, nothing in their answers and reactions would surprise anyone who has had any kind of interaction with Trump voters.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing is great. The whole thing is really, really a good read. There are a bunch of articles like this, but it was this specific interaction that we wanted to focus on today. This is a coda at the end of the piece. Quote, "After breakfast ended and everyone started drifting towards their cars, two of the gentlemen approached me in the parking lot. You know," one of them said, lowering his voice slightly, "I voted for Obama twice." The other nodded, "Me too." I asked what it would take for them to vote for a Democrat again. "Somebody normal," one said. "Somebody who seems like they actually care about regular people," unquote.
Do we believe them, Driftglass?
I personally do not believe that one bit, any more than I believed all those loud, stupid, libtard-hating, pro-Bush Republicans who ran through that magical Bush-off machine and came tumbling out the other side as fake Tea Party goofs, swearing they'd never even heard of George W. Bush. To me, this sounds a lot like a couple of Trump voters with buyer's remorse trying to establish a "Dems used to be reasonable, but now they all suck, so we had no choice" alibi, which, you will remember, is exactly what Republicans said during the Obama administration when explaining why they hated Obama with the heat of 1,000 suns. It wasn't because they were racist, blue gal. Oh, no, 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 of course not. How dare you even suggest such a thing? They despised Obama because he was a far-left radical who hated America. If only Dems had run someone who was normal and reasonable, like, say, that nice Bill Clinton fella. Well, they might have voted for that sort of person, but not that crazy Obama.
That's amazing to me to watch on YouTube the washing of their memories of Obama now. And them support. You know, Obama wasn't so bad. I didn't agree with him, but he saluted the troops.
Jesus Christ. Go back and read.
Just like, yeah.
Go back and read what Michael Gerson wrote about Barack Obama for eight solid years.
Eight years.
Was fucking horrifying.
Yeah,
and they don't want to remember themselves as that person.
As that racist asshole. Right. So let's also mention Bill Clinton, who these same people also hated just as fanatically. But they chose not to remember it that way because that becomes very inconvenient. Instead, they wiped their memory of what they actually believed and what they actually said, and replace it with the myth that, you know, back then Clinton was pretty terrific, Driftglass.
Sure, great
guy. It's just that Dems lost their mind and nominated the one-man Kenyan commie sleeper cell. And, you know, they just couldn't abide that.
They couldn't. That was a bridge too far. But that's just our opinion, right? And it's also a little beside the point because Patrice asked these men, bless his heart, the one question which we have never heard and asked by anyone who spreads this particular fairy tale. Quote, "The Democrats used to talk more about jobs and families," the other added. "Now, half the time, I don't even know what they're talking about."
Yeah, because Joe Biden never talked about jobs or family. No.
Well, that's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is, Patrice asked him where he mostly heard Democrats speaking. And the guy hesitated and he smiled sheepishly and said, Fox News, probably.
Yeah.
Well, I said, that's probably not the cleanest information pipeline. They laughed at that, unquote. Or, if I may quote that famous Bible guy, Mark Twain again, it ain't what you don't know that gets you in trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so.
Yeah, and this answer scales up to include not just MAGA dopes, but all those independents, undecideds, and swing voters, and the third of this country that does not vote at all. Those tens of millions of people who supposedly, you know, I just don't pay any attention to politics. Mm-hmm. But mysteriously, they have this very firmly held opinion about Democrats being just as bad or both sides. They heard it on Fox News, they heard it on hate radio, or since this has become institutional media gospel, repeated over and over again, based on focus group answers from men like these, they heard it on NPR, on PBS, on the Sunday shows, or in the editorial pages of the New York fucking Times, and the Washington Bezos Post, and the Atlantic.
And you know where else, Blue Gal? Every damn day over at the Bulwark.
Yeah.
And yet, you could take that mountain and pulverize it and sift through it like breadcrumbs for the rest of your natural life, and you would never find actual MAGA voters or independent voters or undecided voters or non-voters who actually listen to Democrats talking about anything for any length of time. Their opinions are all secondhand. Fox News and legacy media fairy tales about Democrats, which circulate through the public and then show back up on Fox and in legacy media as proof that the fairy tales are true.
I like that hidden Buckaroo Banzai reference in there too, Driftglass. Only the Professional Life podcast does this.
We try to bring the real deal to the table. The stuff everyone knows like the back of their hand. Like the Bible, yeah. And Buckaroo Banzai. You know,
well,
everyone
knows
that. Just
wait. Here's some more gold that we all need to remember.
Yeah, from a quarter century ago. From damn near
a
quarter century ago.
This is 24 years ago.
Yep.
You will remember, and many of our listeners will remember this, that Vice President Dick Cheney frequently used the term, even the New York Times, as a rhetorical device to legitimize his administration's push for war in Iraq. And the most prominent example of this tactic happened on September 8th, 2002, on NBC's Meet the Press.
Is that he now is trying, through his illicit procurement network, to acquire the equipment he needs to be able to enrich uranium.
Aluminum tubes.
Specifically aluminum tubes. There's a story in the New York Times this morning. I want to attribute the Times. I don't want to talk about, obviously, specific intelligence sources, but it's now public that, in fact, he has been seeking to acquire, and we have been able to intercept and prevent him from acquiring through this particular channel. The kinds of tubes that are necessary to build a centrifuge, and the centrifuge is required to take low-grade uranium and enhance it into highly enriched uranium, which is what you have to have in order to build a bomb.
Cheney used the New York fucking Times article, which cited anonymous administration sources regarding aluminum tubes purchased by Iraq, as definitive proof of the threat, essentially telling critics they didn't have to take his word for it, because even the New York Times was reporting it. Except that report was just another administration lie. And it had been leaked to the Times by Cheney's own people, just so he could launder those lies through America's newspaper of record, so that he could then drop by America's most respected Sunday show and cite his own lies as if they were credible, because they were in the liberal New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, somebody at the New York fucking Times knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
And
somebody
let it happen.
Somebody knew. Yep. And this beltway common wisdom about Democrats being snooty and haughty and not speaking normal language is very much like that. And it's easy to accept because it's an easy answer, isn't it? It's the Merck's Law answer. It's the only Democrats have agency answer. somehow the intransigence and bigotry of the GOP, which we can all see, has to be the Democrats' problem because Democrats use too many big words and are haughty and patronizing.
And nominate women and black people.
Yeah. How dare we?
How dare they? Yeah.
And sometimes even black women.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very haughty and patronizing. That's what that is. So to win elections, Democrats need to fix themselves somehow, starting with nominating a white guy. And I think, unfortunately, that's the lesson a lot of Democrats have learned. When Democrats lose, it's because they did something wrong.
Yeah. They shouldn't have worn that sexy outfit, that short skirt. They shouldn't have.
Or that tan suit.
They were just asking for it, Blue Val. They were just asking for it. Now, more nerd stuff. In season 2 of Star Trek, The Next Generation, in an episode titled Peak Performance, if you want to go look it up, Data is pushed into competing with a smarmy performance expert named Kolrami in a game called Strategema. And spoiler alert, Data loses.
How can you lose? You're supposed to be infallible.
Obviously, I am not.
Data then spirals into what can only be described as an existential crisis. He is consumed with self-doubt. He confines himself to his cabin. He runs diagnostic after diagnostic, but cannot figure out what he had done wrong, where the glitch is. But his ship and his crew really need him. So Picard goes to his cabin and orders him to get his shiny metal ass back to the bridge. And then he gives Data this piece of very sage advice.
And Commander, it is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness. That is life.
This is not to say that the Democratic Party is flawless. It isn't. And it's not to say that the Democratic Party doesn't need to be restructured. It does. Of course it does. And everyone has their own top 10 list of what to change about the Democratic Party.
Absolutely.
Some people have a top 25 or a top 100 list.
Yeah.
And Driftglass and I have our lists too.
We absolutely do.
Yep. The point we're making is this. If it is blindingly obvious to all of us and to billions of people around the world watching in horror as the United States tears itself apart that the Republican Party is the problem, why is it that millions of grown-up adult humans right here in this country cannot see it? Why is it that no matter how monstrously the GOP behaves, unless Donald Trump arrests their immigrant loved ones, rips off their money to build his ballroom, and lies them into another Middle East war he swore only he could avoid, millions of adult humans in the United States refuse to believe that it ain't both sides? Why do they go on believing Democrats are just as bad, or maybe worse?
Yeah, and with the sides now so starkly divided between normal, imperfect governance versus cartoonish evil, why are those millions so deeply committed to not picking a side? Remember, for all of his charm, it took a failing healthcare system, a fatally incompetent hurricane response, which played out for weeks on national television, a disastrous war, which we had been lied into, the collapse of the global economy, and a broad-based Republican attitude of, we don't fucking care, to pry enough people off the bench to put Barack Obama in office with a mandate to, for God's sakes, do something about this.
And it was the collapse of people's individual economies.
Yeah.
It happened to them. They lost their job. I really don't think any of this mattered and would have changed voting behavior had it not affected these folks personally.
Yeah. It got so bad, they were willing to elect a black person.
Yeah, and a Democrat.
And a Democrat.
To change, make a change, please.
Please save us. Please save us.
Yeah, yeah. And even at that scale of multiple national emergencies, it was not enough to keep Republicans and their giant media megaphone from being the lying, racist, obstructionist scumbags they have always been, talking about you, Glenn Beck. It was not enough to keep the legacy media from blaming Obama for every act of Republican sabotage. Because why won't Obama lead?
Why won't he lead, Blue Gal?
Mm-hmm. Not enough to keep Republicans from nominating the king of the birthers in 2016. Not enough for the consensus elite media to look at the choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, shrug their collective shoulders, and say, well, you know, both sides.
Both sides. And then there's this from Vox, December 7th, 2019, quote, "The hand-wringing over the 2016 election continues more than a year later. Fake news, Russia collusion, James Comey, Wisconsin." But two researchers, David Rothschild and Duncan Watts, took on an in-depth analysis of the mainstream media that will add to the 2016 debate. Their findings, published in the Columbia Journalism Review, focus on the New York Times election coverage. Their starkest discovery, in just 6 days, the New York Times ran as many cover stories about Hillary Clinton's emails as they did about all policy issues combined in the 69 days leading up to the election. Rothschild says the front page or online headlines also matter because people rarely read through to the bottom of stories, even well-reported thorough ones. Clinton email scandal is what casual news observers see blaring, renewing the feeling that something nefarious is going on, unquote.
Wow.
Yeah.
I sent something to Driftglass this week from Apple News that was just a headline. Mm-hmm. And it was Donald Trump. It basically said Donald Trump destroys Republican incumbency in all these primaries, blah, blah, blah. Here's what that means for Democrats.
Yeah,
and what failures they are. It was really, the framing of it was so David Gregory. That's what I sent you was, hello, David Gregory. And now here's why Democrats are going to have a problem in November.
Yeah. This is, it's all good news for John McCain stuff.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. In case after case, the legacy media has been either knowingly or unwittingly a partner to conjuring or metastasizing destructive lies about Democrats, which Democrats were then forced to deal with. And this so-called problem with Democratic messaging is just another in a long line of those all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So if it were up to us and we had to come up with a strategy for dealing with a lie about us, which the public had already metabolized, we might wish for 100 more Pete Buttigieg's, but at this point, the most practical approach is to divide our forces. Half the message should be highly focused on the amount of damage Republicans are inflicting on this country, hoping that as the hot stove pain escalates personally for each individual Trump voter and non-voter, frankly.
Yeah. And non-voter especially.
More people will be open to Democratic alternatives.
Yeah. And the other half of Democratic messaging should focus on shredding the legacy media. Burn it to the ground. Take a page out of Donald Trump's playbook and go after the both sides do it press as enemies of the people who've been lying to you all along about what's gone wrong with this country and what you can do about it. This is something liberal bloggers have been writing about for decades, but it's time for prominent Democrats to get off the pot and join us. And yeah,
I have a question for you, Driftglass. Isn't
sure.
this how it used to be? And we talked about this in an earlier podcast, either last week or the week before. Obama did one thing and Joe Biden became the attack dog.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's how presidential tickets go.
Vance
is a liar, but
well
yeah.
no I mean except Trump is also an attack dog. Everyone's an attack dog. They're attack lie all the time. But yeah, the vice president was always supposed to be, you know, I forget the phrase, might have been LBJ, a president needs his son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
You need the guy who's going to go around just breaking knees. And there's people who do that in behind closed doors. That was Rahm Emanuel's specialty. But you need people, you need a lot of Democratic candidates out there saying, pointing at the New York Times, the Washington
Post.
Holding
up the New York Times and saying, what a bunch of fucking enablers of fascism.
And we realize that that's going to feel weird because since on the left, there's nothing at all comparable to the scale of the Fox News hate radio ecosystem that exists on the right. So to carry their message, Democratic politicians have had to rely on a legacy media that's manifestly biased against them.
And,
you know?
And always trying to do that, be biased against Democrats in the effort, as they claim, to appear fair.
To be fair. Got to be fair. And,
attack Hillary Clinton to be fair to Donald Trump.
Right. And the way, because they're terrified of being attacked by conservative media as being too liberal.
As being too liberal.
And they're cowed into doing the Republicans' bidding because they can outshout us by a million times. So it's high time for Democrats to get off the pot and go after the legacy media as the problem. We've said this, you know, for years, for decades now at this point. You've got to burn down the center. You've got to eliminate the center as a viable place for people to hide out. And the way you do that is go after people who claim to be centrists and go after the legacy media that gives them cover. But you got to go after them anyway, because no matter how weird it is, as our pal Steve's has said many, many times, MSNBC is not our friend.
This is true. Hey, Driftglass, let's do a news roundup. We haven't done this in a while, so we've got quite a bit to do.
Yeah.
This is from the Associated Press, May 20th. Quote, Tennessee man jailed over Charlie Kirk post wins $835,000 settlement. Tennessee officials will pay $835,000 to settle a lawsuit filed by a man who was jailed for more than a month over a Facebook post he made about the assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. The meme this gentleman, Mr. Bushart, posted that prompted his arrest read, "This seems relevant today," and featured President Donald Trump and the words, "We have to get over it." That quote, the meme explained, was actually said by Donald Trump in 2024 after a school shooting at Iowa's Perry High School.
Yeah.
Yep. Unquote.
And they arrested this guy. They wrecked his
for
life.
Quoting Donald Trump on Facebook.
They caused him, and he was in jail for weeks.
A month.
Yeah. Wrecked his job, and he sued me. But this is what actual cancel culture looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is from the Texas Tribune, May 19th of this very week. Quote, Trump endorsed Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton over Senator John Cornyn in Texas Republican Senate runoff. The endorsement came after early voting began and immediately angered Senate Republicans. Well, a bunch of eunuchs, shut up, who warned that Paxton could put a normally safe seat at risk against Democrat James Tallarico. Good. Trump nevertheless called Paxton a true MAGA warrior. And the only man in America who's more corrupt than me. No, he didn't say that, but he is. And blamed Cornyn for not supporting him when times were tough, unquote. Mind you, Cornyn's great sin was voting against Trump over January 6th once.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it took. That's all it took.
And the Senate is very mad that Donald Trump has kicked out from the Senate one of their friends from the senior living center that is the U.S. Senate. This is from Bloomberg, May 19th. J.D. Vance defended Trump's 3,700-plus stock trades in the first 3 months of 2026. 3,700 trades.
And dirty trades. Dirty trades.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then manipulating the stock market after he bought, after he sold or bought or whatever. Yes. Calling it absurd to suggest that Trump is sitting in the Oval Office on his computer on his like Robin Hood account buying and selling stocks. The disclosure showed trades in companies with business before his administration, including firms Trump has talked up at events and in social media posts.
Yeah. It's fucking despicable. Anyway, from the Financial Times, May 19th, quote, Donald Trump's and sons granted forever immunity from existing tax audits. Justice Department deal comes the day after the government set up $1.776 billion fund to pay the president's allies hit by allegations of lawfare. Unquote.
Lawfare, Driftglass.
Yeah, we hate lawfare. And in that case, it's all those people who pled guilty to beating cops and attempting to overthrow the government or trespassing or were found guilty by a jury of their peers. There's no exoneration for that. They pled guilty or they were found guilty.
And now they're going to go pardoned. Yes. And now they're going to get a payday. Yes.
Well, pardoning was horrifying enough. But now that they're going to give the Proud Boys, they're going to give Denny Terrio $1.5 million, $2 million.
These are people who went to jail for 20 years for sedition.
Yeah. You know how they broke the Klan? Yeah. They went after their money.
Property.
This and you know scumbag.
Who did that? By the way, you know who did that?
Southern Poverty Law Center. That terrorist
who's now being, they're trying to sue them out of existence.
Yeah. But this scumbag is trying to put money back in the pockets of Nazis who want to hurt us.
Yeah, of course. He's an absolute racist and he wants to monetize the races. Mm-hmm. This is from Gizmodo. Quote, a new lawsuit is just the latest example of why AI probably shouldn't be used for everything. A Pizza Hut franchisee claims the chain's AI-powered delivery system meant to optimize orders and speed up deliveries instead backfired and cost them more than $100 million. Unquote.
In my mind, it's like Lucy.
AI pizza.
On the line.
Yes,
trying to
wrap
candy faster than humanly possible.
Yeah.
This is from the New York fucking Times, May 19th. Quote, 55% of Republicans want the party's next nominee for president to follow Trump's lead. Jesus Christ. But 37% want the party to move in a different direction. Probably.
Would that be a new direction, Driftglass?
A new direction. probably more conservative. He wasn't conservative enough.
He wasn't conservative enough.
Yeah.
They'll do whatever Fox News tells them to do. That's the thing.
They will.
From New York Magazine, May 14th, why Ben Shapiro's media empire is collapsing.
Oh, you got to give people a trigger warning about the sadness of this story, Blue Gal, about how sad it's going to make them.
Grab your Kleenex. Yeah. Poor Bosco's over here listening to us talk, Driftglass, and he's heartbroken.
He's sad. He's weeping. And Olive is back here looking at me like, not Ben Shapiro. Not Shapiro.
And where's Barack Hussein, the Kenyan usurper? There he is. Everybody's here. Okay. We're all set. All three cats are listening in on this extremely sad story about Ben Shapiro's crumbling media empire.
Please make this like Orson Welles' October Halloween broadcast. it's a fake thing, right?
It's just a fake thing. It's just a radio drama. It's true.
Yeah. No, it's all true.
All right. This is from New York Magazine. There was a time not very long ago when Ben Shapiro could reasonably call himself the king of all conservative media. In 2020, as Drew Harwell at the Washington Post notes, Shapiro's media company, The Daily Wire, ranked as Facebook's top English language publisher for three straight months. Don't get Carolee Kunz at Crooks and Liars started about how Ben Shapiro manipulated Facebook. All right.
Right.
Going on with the article, it's sarcastic news items on then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's salon visits gained millions more views than the websites of Fox News, CNN, and the New York Times. Shapiro himself was ubiquitous, a right-wing star who had risen to fame before Donald Trump and seamlessly adapted to the MAGA takeover of the Republican Party. He was a digital battering ram against the Democrats and the progressive left. He seemed guaranteed, like Fox itself, for an indefinite run at the top of the media heap. That's all over now.
Oh.
The Daily Wire is, and this is when the film goes from color to black and white.
Yeah, to sepia. Very sad.
To sepia.
And it starts raining. We have McLaughlin music playing in the background.
Sarah McLaughlin music and puppies in the rain. Yes.
Yeah, very sad.
The Daily Wire is instituting significant layoffs. Its website has emerged as one of the great traffic losers in conservative media. Meanwhile, the company has seen its subscriber base on YouTube starting to shrink.
Oh.
There are Daily Wire YouTube videos that now, after a few days online, have less than 10,000 views, which is more than we get, but not by much. A catastrophically small number for a channel with more than 3 million subscribers. Yeah. I mean, we danced in our kitchen the day we hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And really danced. No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're grateful to you. The top comments all mock the low view count. Well, at least YouTube comment threads are living up to their reputation. If a variety of poor business decisions can be blamed in part for the Daily Wire's downfall, ill-fated investments in feature films, an epic fantasy series, which we read on one outlet that this episode, epic fantasy series cost like $7 million an episode.
Yeah.
Ben
Shapiro is King Arthur in the sword, in the stone.
Right.
Yeah. Whatever.
And also peculiar merchandise. The greater story is the collapse of Shapiro's constituency.
Yes.
Especially among the young media consumers who once fueled the Daily Wire's runaway growth. There are two realities to Shapiro conservatism in 2026. It retains a significant foothold among Republican elites, and it is fast being rejected by the future grassroots of the party. Unquote. I wonder if they're all going over to Nick Fuentes.
Good question.
I don't know.
Maybe by our 1,000th episode, we will discuss that. It is possible.
Yeah.
But for now, we
I have a feeling a lot of these Republican elites still have Drudge as their homepage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They have AOL and they have Drudge.
You're right.
And you know, they still get faxed lists from Laura Ingraham.
See?
About who we're going after this week. Now, everybody, time to pull up a chair around the old campfire, because we're going to discuss, your old Uncle Driftglass and Aunt Bluegal, we're going to discuss the state of the Republican base by comparing and contrasting these two reports. So attend, pay attention. First, from Reuters, May 16th, quote, Trump says Iran war is worth the economic pain. These rural voters agree. Dateline Wiggins, Colorado. Perched behind the cash register at Stubbs Liquor Store, Amy Van Doyne gazed out the window at a red and green gasoline price sign, which she said seemed to tick up daily. The price was $4.34 per gallon, about 50% higher than it was in these parts when President Trump returned to the White House last year. I used to fill my tank for $36, said Van Doyne, 42, and now 36 gets me half a tank. Her co-worker, Tonya Bruyette, said when it's time to buy groceries, she's left wondering where all her money went. We're putting it in the tank rather than on our table. Democrats seized on the comments as evidence of an administration losing touch with an anxious public. Only 30% of U.S. adults approved of Trump's handling of the economy as of May, Reuters Ipsos poll, an issue that had long been one of his political strengths. But in two dozen recent interviews along Colorado's Highway 52, a two-lane blacktop road punctuated by grain elevators, feedlots, and oil pump jacks, Trump voters echoed the president's logic. Across Morgan and Weld counties, which haven't voted for a Democrat in a presidential election since 1964, Blue Gal.
1964? What happened in 1964, Driftglass?
They went all the way with LBJ, Blue Gal. All the way with LBJ.
What did LBJ do then?
He kind of fell from favor, and a bunch of things happened.
A little bit.
and half of our readers weren't born yet, or listeners weren't born yet. So
it was
a time long ago, which I don't remember very well because I was 3 years old.
Yes. Anyway, but I am old enough to look at maps that say that they voted for LBJ in 64 and George Wallace in 68.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, this we've done podcasts on this, but it's wild.
Yep.
If you want to talk about third parties, we'll talk about the most successful third party, which is George Wallace's Independence.
We did a whole podcast on that. Yep.
Anyway, back in 1964, voters were willing to pay more for gas if it meant eliminating a possible Iranian nuclear threat. You know, the one that doesn't exist at all. It was obliterated a year ago.
Yellow cake, Driftglass.
Yeah, yellow cake. It's dust. You know, it's just the dust.
The WMDs are hidden in Syria. Don't forget.
I wonder if Iran has hidden all of its nuclears in Syria along with the Iraqi nucleares.
Next to Saddam Hussein's WMDs.
There's just right behind
the WMDs.
There's a big glass case museum of various WMDs that have been given to Syria by various other countries to hide them from the Americans.
We're laughing, but when you and I talked about this in prepping for this show, and you and I talked about this, this is successful propaganda.
Oh, this is just these people.
Amazingly successful propaganda.
This is when we talk about reprogrammable meatbags.
This is what we're talking about.
Definitely mean these people. Anyway, back to the article.
Yeah.
Energy prices had also spiked under President Joe Biden, many said. Yes. During a global pandemic and the recovery from that, which caused some inflation and supply chain problems, you're right. Energy prices did spike. Some begrudgingly stood by Trump because of their distaste for Democrats. Others expressed faith that the president had a plan to bring costs down. It was a testament to the durable personal bond Trump has built with his base, allowing him to weather multiple crises across his two terms. It feels like he hears us, said Broyette, that he is fighting for us, unquote.
Now, this reminded us of a scene from the movie Enemy at the Gates. It's the mostly true story of the Soviet Union's most proficient sniper during World War II, and the sniping duel that went on during the Battle of Stalingrad. Now, Jude Law plays the Soviet sniper named Zaitsev. In the scene we're talking about, Zaitsev has been brought back to Moscow, where he is steered around the press by Nikita Khrushchev, played very well by the late Bob Hoskins. Khrushchev walks him over to an enormous portrait of Stalin and tells the kid to tell his story to the portrait.
All right, enough.
One more question, no. Please.
Tell it to the boss. He likes good hunting stories.
Look at him with pride, because he's looking at you. The whole country is looking at you.
This is peak authoritarianism. This is when the dear leader is the nation, and the nation is the dear leader. In our case, in Wiggins, Colorado, no matter how much Trump lies to them, no matter how much he screws them over and rips them off, they're still loyal to the dear leader because it feels like he hears us. So, back to the article. Quote, about 25 miles southwest of Wiggins, Jim Miller was elbows deep in the engine of his ailing Dodge pickup. A 65-year-old retired commodities broker raised in the liberal city of Boulder, where my grandparents lived for many years, lovely city, by the way, who now lives in tiny Prospect Valley, Miller considers himself half hippie, half cowboy. He said enduring the momentary pain of high gas prices was worth preventing Iran from pursuing a nuclear weapon. Do you remember the black guy who had a treaty with Iran that would prevent the...
No, yeah, of course not. I do. No.
We do. But
John, it was John Kerry who painstakingly negotiated to keep Iran from developing nuclear weapons.
But Jim Miller doesn't remember that.
Nope.
I bet you Jim Miller remembers Trump tearing it up because it was negotiated by the black guy.
Uh-huh.
Back to the article, Miller recalled stories of American resilience during World War II when goods were rationed and households lived with less. I struggle like everyone else does, but I'm willing to sacrifice a little, Miller said. That's been totally lost in this country. People's willingness to sacrifice, unquote. He's talking about the party that gives billions in tax cuts to billionaires about the willingness to sacrifice.
I remember a total conservative movement that was taxed enough already.
Yeah. Yeah.
We already paid too much. Sacrifices during a time of war. Mm-hmm.
What we mean?
Remember the time of war? We were still at war when the Tea Party came to be.
I remember that George Bush told us we should go shopping.
Yeah, that's right.
That was
that's
the patriotic thing to do. Go shopping while he ran the deficit up through the roof and pissed away Bill Clinton's surplus.
Surplus. Okay. Yeah. Getting back to the article, quote, in the unincorporated town of Rogan was Mike Urbanowitz, a 66-year-old trader with multiple college degrees whose farming cooperative moves 150 truckloads of grain each day. Good for you. That's a hard worker right there. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He voted three times for Trump. But like many interviewed by Reuters, he considers himself a political...
What? What's the word?
Independent!
He's independent, blue gal. He's not a Republican.
No, independent. Mm-hmm. All right. He's saying he distrusts the Republican Party nearly as much as their Democratic foes. Gas prices were hurting his industry, he said, and Trump was naive to think that he could quickly solve the issue. Now, this part kind of breaks my heart because he's right about this. He expected prices would remain high into the fall, even if there was a breakthrough in the stalled U.S.-Iran peace talks.
Mm-hmm.
He's right.
Mm-hmm.
But he preferred the status quo to Democrats, whom he saw as moving towards full-blown socialism.
And you know that we only want half-blown socialism, Blue Gal. That's just
only half-blown.
That's just a dirty lie. Maybe two-thirds blown socialism.
One-third blown would be nice.
Yeah.
I voted for Trump because the alternative is so bad, he said, unquote.
Yeah, right there. Just let sit with that for a minute.
Yeah.
In Fort Morgan, we find Lexis Seabrands, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, a 22-year-old gay woman who recently found Christianity and once considered herself a Democrat but started to think of herself as a Republican around 2022, citing what she called the hypocrisy of liberals around identity politics, and she voted for Trump. Quote, sitting next to her daughter was 49-year-old Jill Seabrands. She grew up as a political, what is it?
Independent.
An independent, that's right, but later gravitated toward Republicans because they have a deeper gravity well, Blue Cow. She said she hated high gas prices but feared the prospect of a what? Nuclear-armed Tehran even more. It's just where we are with this war, she said. People just have to give it time. Did she have any red lines, anything that might shake her faith in Trump's handling of the war or the economy? No, she said. I'm all on board, unquote.
Mm-hmm. Not an independent anymore.
Persuasion works, Blue Gal. Persuasion works.
Well, yeah, because they're watching Fox, and you and I don't watch Fox. I mean, we get what we get from Media Matters, but there is obviously from this a unrelenting drive to convince people that Iran is 1 minute away from having a nuclear weapon and aiming it at the heartland of America.
Are you saying that the final proof might be a mushroom cloud, Blue Cow?
That's what I'm saying, Drift Glass.
So they're stealing from David
We don't want the Iranians to bring us a mushroom cloud.
They're dusting off a quarter century old David Frum speech that he wrote for George Bush.
Yeah, and Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah, it worked
repeated
once.
Repeated it.
Yep. Playing the hits, baby. Playing the hits.
Playing the hits. Mm-hmm. Now compare all of that with this from Raw Story, May 19th. By the way, Laura Ingraham quoted Raw Story. Did you see that on House Sparks?
Oh, no.
She quoted Raw Story quoting the New York Times.
Wow.
Because she wants to argue with Trump about Iran. And she on Twitter, she quoted Raw Story. So all this stuff about liberal media, this liberal media, that, she quoted Raw
She's
Story.
Gotta have, okay. She better have somebody to start her car and taste her soup for the next few minutes.
Quote, Trump voter turns on president during call to MAGA network. I'm being lied to. A self-described Trump lover lit up a MAGA network call-in show this week to call out the president. Matt from Las Vegas, this is going to make me laugh again. I'm going to try to read this straight. Phoned into Real America's Voice host Eric Bolling. Was he texting nudes? Nudes of himself
at the time.
Women
were you doing
employees?
It on the air, Eric Bolling? Yeah.
Yeah. Do women that work at Real America's Voice get to see Eric Bolling's manhood on their phones? I wonder. Because people who worked with Eric Bolling at Fox apparently did.
Yeah.
I've heard many people say they saw Eric Bolling's nudes, right?
And he texts them strongly and powerfully. That's the important thing.
Strongly and powerfully.
Yeah.
Anyway, Matt from Las Vegas phoned into Eric Bolling on Tuesday and cut straight into the administration's Iran war narrative, questioning why commercial ships can't pass through the Strait of Hormuz if the U.S. military thoroughly destroyed Iran's Navy and Air Force. I mean, he's using logic, Drift Glass. That's what he's doing.
Danger.
And he said on the phone to Eric Bolling, I'm being lied to by my own government, the caller railed, unquote. A lot of people came to that conclusion in Iran.
Yeah.
Iraq. I'm sorry, with Bush in Iraq.
Yes, they did.
And if he just left it at that, we'd have some hope for his immortal soul, Drift Glass.
Yes, we would.
But Matt from Las Vegas, he just couldn't leave it there. He had to flash his MAGA credentials on Real America's Voice. Quote, I hate to say it, Mr. Trump, and I love Donald Trump, but all this, they're annihilated and all your bullshit. Iran won this round as far as I'm concerned, unquote.
And that's why all of these people, from all those chumps in Colorado to Matt from Las Vegas, are a pestilence. Whether it's the 22-year-old getting her 11th tattoo or the 66-year-old trader with multiple college degrees, you can just hear generations of Fox News and hate radio sewage sloshing around in their skulls, reinforced and anchored firmly in place by the legacy media's both sides do it lie.
Yeah, they are the living, breathing examples of what we've talked about on this podcast for the last 993 episodes. No matter how bad Republicans act, it is an article of faith with them that somehow Democrats are always worse. And above all else, even Matt from Las Vegas says up front that he loves Donald Trump. And by omission, he confesses that all the other monstrous things Trump had already done obviously didn't bother him all that much. All the looting, the extortion, the lies, January 6th, the ICE goons terrorizing innocent people, murdering Alex Pretty and Renee Good, and so on and so on. None of that fazed him. Just the lies about Iran. That was a bridge too far.
And you know, Blue Gal, you know that eventually he'll forgive and he'll forget. Or he'll take a quick shower in the Trump off machine and wash his past away. And you know that all of them would happily line up to vote to make Donald Trump a dictator for life.
Because the alternative is so bad, Driftglass.
It's full-blown socialism.
Yeah. No. And you said this. You said that, you know, this is years of Fox News viewing and hate roads. And decades.
Literally, if you count up years, it's generations of
but
Fox
News.
But it's
also, they do so much strategic forgettery that I really feel that it's merely hours. Yeah. It is the last, you know, 50 hours of watching Fox and being convinced that Iran is going to drop a nuke on us any minute. And so gas, it's worth it to make the sacrifice to pay gas prices, which they would never, ever do if a Democrat was president. They would never suggest making a sacrifice for that.
That skill to remember selective parts of the past when you need to, and then automatically forget it and contradict yourself is what Orwell talked about when he talked about doublethink.
Yep,
that
exactly.
you've got to be able to pull the necessary details from the past if you need them, and then wish them away again as if they were never there to bolster your argument. And so these people are fully brainwashed, and they are not going to come back, and they're not persuadable. But you can hear the elements of what makes it work. It's not just Fox News. And it isn't just Fox News viewers or hate radio viewers or MAGA people. It's the undecided voters. It's the swing voters. It's all the people who partake in the both sides do it lie that holds this whole monstrous thing together. Anyway, shall we get on to some fun news, Blue Gal?
Yeah, some fun news. And part of me thinks this is not a bad idea. We'd love to know what you guys think. This is some meta news from Engadget this week. Quote, Spotify is launching verification badges for podcasts to help listeners avoid AI slop, to help authenticate creator identity and likeness. The most obvious use case for this is to help listeners find real podcasts amid a sea of AI slop. To that end, the platform says it will also now remove podcasts that impersonate other creators via AI voice cloning or any other method. The Verified by Spotify badge is accompanied by a light green checkmark icon, making real deal podcasts much easier to spot while perusing. These badges and icons will appear on show pages and in search. The verification process takes the podcast itself into account, but also its listeners. This is amazing. AI-generated podcasts tend to attract a bot-driven listenership. Was it just bots making podcasts for other bots? Is that what's going on?
That's something out of like Ray Bradbury.
It is. You know,
machines just talking to themselves.
There's a whole world out there with machines talking, that's what you say, talking for themselves. But Spotify is looking for sustained listener activity with consistent audience engagement over time, unquote.
To which we say,
badges. We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Thanks for listening. We're glad to be with you. Happy Memorial Day weekend. And we'll see you next Thursday. Just reminding everybody, no show next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Each week we post to our Patreon page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Suki. Suki's human rights. Suki climbed up on my leg one day when she was a kitten and began to purr.
Aw.
I didn't know that she'd chosen me, but now I do. And she has no intention of letting me forget it. And of course, Suki Eats freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cat will climb up your leg, purr in kittenish, and demand that the food they eat from that day forward is only freshly poured.
Oh my Lord, it's freshly poured. That's the flavor they adore. One small scoop and hearts are sore. Oh my Lord, it's freshly poured.
Oh yeah.
And you can visit Suki, a beautiful cat, at our Patreon page, patreon.com/proleftpod, or our website, proleftpod.com. And you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write to us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go, Postal, Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise.
And a friendly reminder once again of our gourmet coffee guideline. If you're able to treat yourself to an espresso-based beverage, we ask that you consider treating us to one as well. This isn't charity. This is how we support the work that we do. If you can spare just $5 a month, we'd be very grateful for your support at patreon.com/proleftpod or at Venmo, and then you just look for the professional left. Please also help us continue to grow by sharing our show on social media. Find a friend who needs to hear what we have to say and thinks like you do, and share it with them, and I'm sure they'll be grateful. And if not, I'm sure they'll let us know in the comments. And many, many thanks to the Bob Seska Show, the Nicole Sandler Show, and the Bradcast, all three of which hosted me this week on their very fine podcast and radio show, Grams. It was an absolute delight. They're wonderful hosts and wonderful people, and it's great to be in good company during these dark times.
Another reason why we're giving Driftglass Tuesday off next week. He did five podcasts this week.
I did.
And there is a link to each of those additional Driftglass appearances in our show notes. I haven't listened to Nicole yet or the Bradcast. The Bradcast wasn't up yet when we last checked, but it will be.
Hey, Brad, get on that, man. Get on that. Come on. Come on, brother.
He just recorded that at like 4 o'clock this afternoon. So yeah, that's pretty recent.
It's been a day. It's been a long day.
But we're going to put a link to each of those Driftglass appearances in our show notes so that all of you can go check those out and get as much Driftglass in your life over the weekend as possible.
Yeah.
And Digby and Nicole and... Yeah. Brad and Bob Seska everyone is wonderful. We love all of you. And there's a lot to listen to. You will not be without Driftglass this weekend. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, blue gal, the internet kitties will need to see your stinking badges before answering that question.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovin'. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is produced and recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright DGBG Productions. ProLeftPod.com.